Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
Hello and welcome.
Hello
and welcome to episode 206. Tonight's show is brought to you by Watching Light Flash. I'm not going to elaborate.
What? I don't even know what that means.
I'm not going to elaborate on air, but I met a listener in person this week, and that's what he told me he does for a living, and then we laughed about it because he's a welder.
Okay.
So, yeah. We're going to talk about what I've been doing, and what I've been doing is Saturday, I sold my electric trials bike before work, and in true fashion of just the way things go, I was goofing around on it before homeboy showed up, and I stepped off wrong, and I sprained my toe, because Chacos are not motorcycle boots, so
you're lucky you still have a toenail on that toe.
It just bent under, is all.
Yeah.
I mean, just bent under, but I mean, it didn't go, like, under a moving wheel or something. It just went under my whole ass's worth of weight, so.
I'll let you continue, but I do have to throw this in. I think it was a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. There is it's a long story on what it's for, but it's a metal rod, solid steel, 1 inch in diameter, 3 feet long. It weighs probably 30 pounds. It is a chonking unit. And that thing rolled off a shelf 5 feet up directly onto my foot with the pointy end. It was very bad.
Did it break anything?
Well, when it hit, I knew immediately. I was like, yep, foot, it's broken. Zero doubt. That's 100% broken. Because it was a 9 out of 10 pain for 1 second and then went fully numb. And I was like, oh yeah, it's done. It's totally done. And somehow it's okay.
Did it bruise and like swell or anything?
It turned immediately black after, you know, in 30 minutes it was black, which is cool. Yeah. So I put some ice on it and all that. I could like still semi, I was like, it landed basically straight on my big toe, but back, you know, probably 2 inches on the knuckle, back 2 inches on the knuckle of your big toe, if that kind of makes sense. So kind of in your, kind of the start of your webbing, if you will, I guess. But right there, square on the bone of the big toe.
Did you say bad words?
I probably said a couple things, but I mean, honestly, I was more just like, damn it. It was more of the, this is going to be inconvenient. Really, is what it is.
Oh, yeah. I hate
like,
that.
I was thinking, like, fuck, I'm going to walk around in a goddamn boot or something stupid. And, yeah, and then you can't, like, do stuff, and it's just a pain in the ass. But anyway, somehow, magically, it's been okay. And for the most part of my life, and I promise I'll let you go, Matt, but I've come off some machinery at pretty high rates of speed, and I've been pretty bouncy and bendy my whole life. It's pretty impressive. I have broken my collarbone. That was 4 or 5 years ago, something like that. 4 years ago. 5 years ago, yeah.
And then there's that time you broke your face.
Yeah, but I never broke anything. That's the thing. And maybe they were like, oh, yeah, part of your face is broken, but like, you know, we don't have a face cast, so like it'll be fine. I can't remember exactly what it was. But moral story is I've hit the ground a lot. And shockingly enough, I'm usually pretty bendy, which is pretty cool. And this is one of those times where I guess I got bendy toe bones.
Whole fucking Gumby over here.
But it turns out that if you do fully plant your shoulder into a berm at 30, that is the limit of my bones.
Something's got to give.
Some screaming music. All right, Matt, sorry about that. So that's
my week.
You hurt your pinky toe.
No, it was my big toe. I folded my big toe way under. But like kind of my whole foot too. So it hurts a little bit. I mean, the toe hurts for sure. And then the ankle's a little sore. But honestly, I think some of the soreness in the ankle could be from walking in a way to try to alleviate some pressure on the toe. I don't know. I'm
pretty pumped to see what you're going to buy with your money.
I told you what I'm going to buy, and you didn't believe me.
Yeah. We'll see.
I'm just going to save up. I'm going to keep saving towards my next vehicle, but this isn't becoming the vehicle show 2 weeks in a row.
Do you have like a bad decisions bank account?
I do.
Because I definitely do. 100%.
I
actually need to rename it bad decisions.
I am now to the point where I've made a lot of bad financial decisions in terms of like, haha, bad, not like.
I mean, have you really though? We don't need to go down this whole rabbit hole, but like, I definitely don't see it from my vantage point.
Well, I mean, for my income level, I think that I buy some things that I don't need and don't have to have. And that's what I'm trying to trim back over the next while so I can get something that I actually have wanted for quite a while.
But you've never gone out and, you know, at your income level, financed a brand new F-150, for example, right?
No. See, that's something that I'm big into is I only buy shit that I can pay for.
There you go.
So I don't own anything. Nope. I was trying to remember if I put that chain lube on layaway or if I paid for it before I left the shop. I own everything.
There you go. And I think that's a good...
Except a bottle of chain.
Yeah, it's a pretty good way to go through life.
And yeah, like, actually, when I was at my family's house a while back, they were like joking around at dinner, and they're like, said something. My brother-in-law was like, yeah, my truck's about to be paid off. And I'm like, dude, you need to open a savings account and keep making that truck payment every month. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, you've been spending that money every month. Don't get used to having it. Start stacking it away. And when your truck needs tires, just pull it out of that account. So, like, I am in a position where I could finance a vehicle because I make a $500 car payment a month. But I just move $500 into my vehicle savings. And then when I need tires, I just swipe it on my credit card. And when I get home, I transfer that $1,200 over and pay off my credit card. I mean, it's just like I'm buying car parts every month, whether I need them or not. And then when I have to buy them, it's no big deal. Yeah. And I think people, you know, you could do that for just about anything, you know.
Well, yeah, I got like it's a bike savings account, but like, I don't know what I want to buy. And there's no bike that I look at and I'm like, I got to have that. And I'm going to get that and have a great time on it and ride it 3 or 4 days a week. And yeah, so I don't know. I just have like a savings account that has enough money to buy whatever bike I want. And I haven't bought it because there's not a bike that I want.
And sorry if you guys hear bass. One of my new renting neighbors has a gaggle of 9 people in the house, all with lowered, piped out VW GTIs, and apparently one of them just got a new 6-inch subwoofer and is thinking he's cool right now. I'm about to go over there and punch him in the face.
There is someone in Salida that drives around in a Jeep Grand Cherokee with the worst trunk rattle you've ever heard, and they'll just like make laps around town, and then they'll park by the shop, and I'm like, I could solve this problem with my Schrader valve core tool. I could solve this problem. And
you'd have to use the Schrader valve tool away from the shop, or else they're just going to park with a flat tire by the shop.
I don't know. But I mean, that was really all I did this week is I sold a moto. I folded my toe under, so I haven't done a lot. It's coming around. It felt pretty good until today when I didn't take any ibuprofen and I did a little, like, roughly 2-hour bike ride on Andrea on the e-bikes. So it hurts a little bit now, but it's really funny. Like, on Sunday, you know, I did it on Saturday. On Sunday, I test rode a bike and I was like, wow, riding a bike. And this is even in just like New Balance sneakers on like flat pedals. I'm like, riding a bike doesn't hurt as much as walking. I'm like, I could probably do some easy rides pretty soon. And then it flash flooded a bunch here this week. And I saw lightning strike a tree and knock all the smoke out of this little tree. Once my foot feels better, I fully plan. Like, I know exactly where it is within probably along this hillside. I know it was like halfway up and within like a 300 yard zone. So I'm going to go find that tree. I'm going to take a picture of it once my foot feels good. But then I was going to go show Andrea all the flooding. So I came home from work and I was like, hey, you should check it out. Like, everything is running right now. And we went to go look at it running. But on the way there, there was a structure fire.
Yeah. Like, we were leaving our neighborhood and looked across, like, I don't know, you have like the river valley and then there's sort of like a mesa that you have to drive up. I don't know. It's probably Matt, what would you say? Like 150 foot elevation gain from like
the river to the mesa is probably closer to 250, I'm going to guess.
All right.
I mean, think about like, it.
We were about to like drop off of the mesa and looked across to like the next part of the neighborhood and there's a column of smoke coming up off of something and we're like, oh shit. And we live, you know, we're kind of rural. We have a volunteer fire department. They're really good. Our volunteer fire department is on fucking point.
They work like they know that that structure fire could burn their house down a mile away.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, they are on top of stuff. But it's still a tiny community, you know? And so when you see something like that and you're like an able-bodied person that's not a dumbass, you go and you're like, hey, do you guys need help? And they're like, we got this under control, but there might... Like, the way the smoke was kind of blowing around and there were a lot of really low clouds, it looked like there could possibly be another fire, like, a little down valley. And so he's like, if you guys could go with... There was another a lady that saw the same thing, and she's like, yeah, I'll go look. He's like, yeah, if you could go check on that, that would be great. So, yeah, like, we're like, okay. And we went and, like, drove around and, you know, like, made sure nothing else was on fire. Because that's what you do when you live in a community of, I don't know, around 1,000 people.
Yeah, I think the latest census was under 950.
Yeah. So.
Anyways, and then, yeah, we went for a ride today, and we rode through some stuff that had flooded, and it was pretty taxing even on the old e-bike. And then I knew that kind of on how my foot felt, it didn't feel good right out of the saddle, and it didn't feel great all around. But I also, yeah, was going to go keep riding. And on the way home, I was like, I know I'm not going to ride again this week. So I did my baby's first e-bike interval. And it was...
Yeah. Our hill is really good for that. Like, you can put it in full on, like, whatever your highest assist mode is and ride it, like, right at the, speed cutoff.
Yeah, like, you can't go up this hill faster than 19 miles an hour, so it never is doing the, like...
I was doing that some today, a little bit, like just a few times.
Okay.
Was yours not cutting out at all?
Mine never cut out.
Okay, I had a couple cutouts.
You were also behind me.
Yeah, I was already tired by then. I was like, fuck, I don't know why he wants to ride so fucking fast, but whatever.
I mean, I was tired too, but I just did it, so yeah, that was...
I'm gonna go stomp around in the mountains tomorrow.
Yeah, and I'm not. So that was my week. Someone else should start talking now, like Kenny.
All right. I have no bicycling stories for you. I'm very sorry. We are deep in moto land. I got a new ECU for the Husky 350. I installed that, did a little bit of tuning on it and kind of trial. And yeah, it's pretty neat. I've always had kind of those bikes are pretty corked up from the factory. It's a street legal one. And it's probably down 10 horsepower on like the motocross version, but it's the same engine. And it's definitely, it's really the down low stuff that I wanted more of. I really didn't need it to scream any more up top. Like, it's still pretty fast. But yeah, decided to just try out an ECU, see what it's about. I also got a map switch for it. So it's got two different maps you can switch between. And it's got a quick shifter and traction control, which is kind of cool. I play with the traction control. It's pretty much worthless. Going up just a semi-loose gravel road in like fourth gear, and you roll on the throttle, and it just instantly traction controls you.
Falls on its face.
Yeah, and it just an experiment. I laid all the way down in at 100% throttle for probably 2 minutes and got up to like 40 miles an hour. It just, it's worthless. Whereas if you do that in real life, you're going, I mean, it gets decent traction. You can do 0 to 60 on a gravel road in like 4 seconds. It will scoot. So anyway, went and I got a really big ride in down south in the La Salle's again. I had a big old loop planned out and it went pretty much right according to plan. It was really, really cool. It was 130 miles and 4 hours. Super cool out in the middle of friggin' nowhere. And there's just trails and awesome gravel roads and just shit everywhere. It's absolutely mind-blowing. But yeah, the moto was really good. It's got an extra probably 5 to 8 horsepower ish I'm guessing, mostly in like the mid and upper portion, but it's definitely snappier down low as well. Pretty cool. It definitely woke it up. It's kind of like a little bit of a different motorcycle now. It was okay before, to be honest. It was fine. I was really trying to hold off on doing this because I didn't really think it was that necessary. More power is not always better, but this is perfectly good. It's still pretty reasonable down low, but if you stay in it, it feels pretty close to a 450. It's pretty quick. Yeah. It was all, yeah, pretty much all gravel roads. I looked at the Garmin file after the fact and I hit like 88 miles an hour or something like that. And it's pretty crazy. So it's pretty quick. Yeah. I think that's all I got. Was there anything else cool about that trip? Let's see. A cool little.
Did you cook any nuggets in the air fryer?
Good question. Fantastic question. I made a couple of pizzas, little baby pizzas in the air fryer. It was great. A cool little town I found. It is called, what is the name of this place? And it's not so much the town, it's more of like where the town butts up to this mountain and all the different trails coming off there. It's called Ferron, F-E-R-R-O-N. So if you're bored and you want to look up roughly where I was in Ferron. Well, I drove up and I went over starting Ephraim and I went up and over about 40 miles to go up and down this mountain range. And then I went down south like 10 miles and then went back and up and over the mountain range a different way. So it's this huge loop that basically just straddles. It goes up and over, up and over, up and over. Yeah, super cool. I think that's all I got. I'll think about something else in a second, I'm sure. But I think that's all I got.
All right. I've just been doing it. Finally cooled off here. And so I've been doing a lot of just, I don't know, like catching up on... baking. I know it sounds silly, but like I figured out that I baked so much bread for myself that I just absolutely fucking hate just the plain ass bread at the grocery store. Like I can't stand it. It's just like the texture is awful and it doesn't really taste like anything. So
I can just sit down and eat a plain sleeve of white bread.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I probably could too, but I wouldn't enjoy it as much as a plain loaf of homemade white bread.
Oh, for sure.
And so I like baked a bunch of bread.
Bread's like potatoes to me. There's so many different types of potatoes I love, and like pretty much all bread I will eat.
Yeah, yeah. But it's too hot in our house to bake during the summertime. So I just haven't had, like I've barely eaten any bread over the summer because I couldn't stomach it. I just didn't enjoy eating it. It made eating a chore. To try and eat whatever bread. Like, I tried a few different ones, and I just don't like any of them. So, yeah, like, I just baked some bread, and I've canned a few things that were ripe in the garden, and I just did a bunch of, like, I don't know, homestead shit, kind of. That's kind of all I've done. That, and then, yeah, Matt and I went for a bike ride. We wanted to look at kind of the aftermath of the flash flooding on Sand Gulch Road near us. And it is the most literal road name in the area. It's literally a gulch full of fucking sand. And it's just full of more sand now because it all washed like down in off the sides and into the gulch. So it's like extra sandy gulch now.
Extra sandy.
That's about it for me. I'm about to head out to Sense. So... hunting season starts on Tuesday next week. The area where I'm going to go it's pretty limited as far as dispersed camping. It's got some reservation camping that you can, you know, like go online and book a campsite, but they're like $28 a night. And I really don't want to pay to, I don't know, sleep in my truck. So the dispersed free camping is somewhat limited. And being that it's Labor Day weekend, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be able to get a campsite unless I go and do that really obnoxious thing that people do where they go and they, you know, like set a folding chair in a campsite. But yeah, I'm going to go and do that tomorrow. Well, I'm going to set up a tent. Hopefully no one steals the tent, but you know, that's the risk you take. But I'm going to go set up a tent, do a one last little scouting hike and... just getting excited about just being in the woods for a while. But that's it for me. You guys, you want to do new shit? There's not a lot of new shit again.
Yeah, there is.
I mean, there's all that stuff from the Made Bike Show, but that stuff doesn't count.
Well, there's a couple things let's run through. Manitou is going to have a 220mm dual crown fork. Kenny, does that make your bits jingle?
Yeah, I've... never touched a Manitou product that I wanted. Not saying this couldn't be the one, but again, I don't want to be mean. Making suspension is hard. Clearly, making forks is hard. Olin's couldn't handle it first time out. I'm going to give Manitou a slight pass here, but Manitou's been at it for a long time. They've just never made anything compelling. They made shit that was different, but they've never made anything that does anything better than anything I've seen. And then, like, if you need support on something later, and if you just need mainstream parts or seals or whatever, I just don't like buying obscure shit, especially suspension. Maybe it's cool. Maybe it's cool. I hope it's cool. Where'd you see that so I can go check it out? I'm not seeing it on the usual suspects here.
It was on the pink bike.
All right. I'll kind of scroll around. I'll try and find it. So it's a 220. Is it upside down or standard?
Upside down.
All right. See if I can find this thing here.
Well, are you on your Mac?
On my Mac.
Don't you have a Macintosh computer?
I do, but yeah, I'm on a... I send it on the old telephone here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Here we go. Okay, I thought it was a little bit more official and made, but okay. All right.
Yep. And then next one up that I wanted to talk about quickly, DT Swiss introduces the FR rim. We're talking about a 700 gram 29er rim.
Damn.
Yeah. It's a chonker. So, and they come in silver, which is really cool. That's really all I care about.
I really like just a good silver hub.
I'm a big fan of black hubs, black rims, silver spokes, and nipples.
I like that too.
Silver everything.
I like that too. I think that's pretty cool. I like a good old
just all black everything.
I like silver hub, black spokes, silver nip, black hoop.
That's good too. Yeah.
But I can also see silver hoop, silver hub, black spokes, black nips. Be pretty
or,
sick too.
Or you could be really brave and do colored nipples that'll definitely fall apart in like a season. So yeah, and then I want to make fun of something. I want to make fun of two things, so we'll do those second. Esker released a new hardtail. It's called the Solitaire, and it is dedicated single speed. Of course, one could run gears as long as they had no wires, because this has no provisions for mounting derailleur cables to the frame. But with that...
It's got lots of warts.
It's got lots of warts. Also, okay. Yeah, and it's really cool, and it has... extra tube in the top tube, because it's got a middle tube, it's got a top tube, it's got a down tube, it's got a mid tube. This bitch has all the tubes.
It's got all those warts, but then they like put the extra tube there so that like you can't put a frame bag in there to...
No, your frame bag goes up here and your water bottles go down here. You're just not a cool kid.
I'm not a cool kid.
I'm not a cool kid either. It's not for me, but they made 50 of them. And...
Yeah, I can see the draw to it. It's cool if you're into that kind of thing. How about that?
Mm-hmm. Really is. So there you have it. Pretty cool setup there. And they released a fork as well. The fork has all the warts and everything one could hope for. It does fork things.
Is that an IS mount fork?
100%. No, post mount.
Okay. The way that little bracket came off of the fork, it looked like it was IS tabs.
So there you have it. If you're into that sort of thing, do it. And if you're not, don't. Something I called a long time ago, and I don't know if I ever talked about on the show, titanium RetroTech is likely first pinion gearbox that can also be a single speed. Been saying this for forever. Gearbox bikes won't be cool until someone makes a thing so you can just bolt in a regular ass BSA bottom bracket, and that's what RetroTech did. Theirs isn't what I was hoping for, but I know that if gearbox bikes ever become more popular, that what I want.
So you can take the gearbox out. Like, yep. That's what I'm looking at in that picture, is they removed the gearbox and just put a bottom bracket in there.
Yep.
Okay.
It's pretty slick, but in my world, I envisioned like a probably two pieces of CNC machined aluminum that would get welded together with the bottom bracket, like sleeve inside. That way, like, this has a lot of spot to collect crap.
Yeah, it does.
And I was picturing something that was essentially like, it would look like an empty gearbox. You know, it would be smooth on the sides, but it would like match the profile of the gearbox cut out in the frame and stuff. I understand this went to the Handmade Bike Show. This really got a lot of good attention. But I think someone could make something out of aluminum that was a little bit prettier and probably, I don't know, it's never going to be light. You're bolting a big ass hunk of aluminum into your bike. That's why I think it would be like two pieces that were welded together. Or maybe this is a really good application for like 3D printing titanium. I don't know. But somebody could do something really cool and mass produce something like this. And then two things, I'm going to bitch about. Abbey Bike Tools has fun with precision drink kit. They made a titanium broom. That was a joke. They had some scraps. But of course, the bike industry had to do something related to booze, and now they have 1 pound stainless steel food grade shot glasses. Yeah.
I mean, you can drink stuff that's not booze out of there. I could put my morning shot of aloe vera juice in there.
You know, if you want to drink your slippery elm root out of there, that's your call. But like, I just don't redesign your dub tool so it doesn't came out of the thing as easily. Like, I don't know. Do something that's good. And then I want to talk about this Bitchin' Bikes drop bar 30 tour and how they didn't do what they should have done for a 32-inch wheel bike.
What, lit it on fire? Make it super boost? We had a conversation about that in Patron Slack, that super boost should be the 32-inch wheel standard. Shouldn't be on any other bikes. Every bike that is made with 32-inch wheels should be super boost.
Why?
Because of stiffness. The same shit that they say why you should have it for a 29-inch wheeled bike, for tire clearance, for frame stiffness.
I'm about to blow up your tire clearance thing. This drop bar 32er, the seat tube angle is like 3 because they wanted to pull the rear wheel way in. That's not why we want 32. We want 32 for a big, long, stable bike.
I mean, maybe that's why you want it. But some people want it for the rollover.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not. Also, if they'd made that straight, they could have put one of them bottle cages in there too, but they didn't. I don't know. I'm just going to have to get someone to build me a 32er, whatever. That's it, Kenny. I'm going to spend my stupid money on a stupid bike that I'm not going to ride.
All right.
I'm not going to do that. Yeah, and then the S-Works demo is more real than ever. The demo with the not-a-gearbox thing in it.
That's pretty wild looking.
Mm-hmm. This pedals internally to that, and the chain is 100% not connected.
That is fucking wild.
And this is just an idler pulley. That's not a drive thing.
That's weird.
So fucking good. So there we go. That's all I got.
The one thing that I thought was kind of cool is that, and this ties into a listener question that we have. Moots has a new adventure bike. I mean, they also have a new gravel bike, or they're updating their gravel bike for more tire clearance. Whatever. That's what all gravel bikes are doing now. They do have they call it an adventure bike. It's a drop bar mountain bike. It's got a 100 millimeter fork, or it's built around a 100 millimeter fork, 9x2.4 tires. It's funny because they're updating their gravel bike, and then they're also, like, on top of that, making a bike that is what the gravel bike is trying to be.
No, one suspension corrected and uses mountain bike parts. The other one is a road bike that holds huge tires.
Right.
So I think they're drastically different bikes. But well, I think right now we're in that realm where we're talking about an Epic Evo and a tall boy at the same time.
No, because I think that the making a gravel bike with humongous tire clearance is for the road person that is like, I just need more tire. I just need more tire. I need more tire on my gravel bike because I'm not comfortable. And then you're like, why don't you get a drop bar mountain bike? They're like, no, I don't want a drop bar mountain bike. I want a gravel bike. And then on the other hand, you have like the mountain bike person that's like, I still want to ride something that's called a mountain bike, but I want it to work like a gravel bike.
Right.
And then that's the bike that they get, is the one with the suspension fork and 2.4 tires. Because if they rode a road bike, they'd be gay.
But what you're missing as the super archer / tanner / gardener is bigger tires are winning gravel races.
Right.
So having a bike that rides like a gravel / road bike that holds a huge tire is super fast. This bike is going to steer differently. It's going to ride totally differently. And I don't disagree that a number of people should buy that bike. But the person that wants their gravel bike to ride like a gravel bike but not beat them to death wants the big tire gravel bike.
Okay. But that's the only new shit that I saw that I thought was like mildly interesting. But we do have some listener questions. One of them is drop bar mountain gravel adjacent. So I'm going to start with that one from Anthony. Anthony says, hello, Jerry. Love the show. What are your thoughts of converting an older NIDS era cross-country hardtail to drop bars? Currently have a parts bin that would allow me to build either way and happen to find a clearance cross-country frame that definitely has outdated geo while still being boost spacing. Frame would fit 120 millimeter fork with a reach of 455 versus 490 reach for my trail hardtail, which is a Linsky Livewire. Been seeing more gravel bikes coming out with similar reach numbers and short mountain bike stems. Looking to build something faster and more capable than my 2014 Roland ULV. The Livewire with 140 fork is my fun bike, located in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And majority of my closest rides are very rocky, chunky gravel, much like the Jeep roads you explained in a recent episode. Thoughts? For additional info, I'm 6'2", 34-inch inseam, and 0 ape index.
I'll go first. I think you're going to end up running probably... Sorry, I'm really trying to do some math here in my head. But it's about you, not the bike first. You're probably going to... The problem is with that 455 reach with a road bar and a road like shifter brake lever doodad on it, you're probably going to need like a 40 or... You're going to need the shortest stem you can find. That's
Matt, what reach did you have on like road bikes and gravel bikes and stuff?
So that's where it gets really tough when you're talking about road bikes. I think the easiest way to think about a drop bar bike is total reach. And assuming that you're going to run a short and shallow bar and you're going to run the same, you know, shifter or whatever, you can ignore the bar reach and the hood reach. If you did have a road bike that you liked, you could work backwards, including the bar differences in shifter, like hood design and stuff, because those do change some. Excluding the bar and stem.
Yeah, that was my question. It's like, what reach do you run on a road? Like, what is on the geometry chart for your drop bar bikes? What is the reach number?
On the geometry chart, I mean, I really like something in that 385, 390 range.
Okay.
But I run that with a 120 millimeter stem, getting me to a total reach of around 505.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that should work.
But so he would have to run a 50 millimeter stem to be where I am. But I'm 6'2" with probably a 33 inch inseam. So I have more torso than you, so I can reach over further. And then I have a positive ape index. So I have,
well,
longer.
I think he's also not going to have his bars like 6 inches lower than his saddle too.
I didn't get into my issues I'm going to run trying to get bars low on a hardtail to drop bar conversion. I'm just talking about he doesn't have as much to reach with as me, so he's probably going to want like a 40 stem. Like, I don't think he would run as long of a stem on a gravel bike.
My point was that if he's not running his bars very low, his reach won't have to be, like, his reach won't have to be as short. So, like, having your bars higher is going to, like, you don't have to stretch your arms out as far to reach your shifters, is what I'm saying. Anyway.
I don't understand.
So
it's okay. Don't worry about it.
I think a very, very basic rule of thumb here. And again, we're talking about doing some kind of kook shit here, so don't take this as fact. But if I think he's on the right track. I'm just kind of looking around at geometry charts of just modern trail bikes and modern road bikes of the same size, and I'm seeing a reach difference of around 60 millimeters. So if you have a reach that is roughly 60 millimeters less, you should be able to roughly set that bike up the way that you want. So that's my take on it.
Yeah. One thing you might run into is that most of your shift levers for drop bars are going to come with flat mount brakes. So you might need to purchase new calipers to put.
It sounded like he maybe had like a bin of shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe he does. Maybe he doesn't. If you have a bin that has, you know, and they used to exist. You used to be able to readily find, you know, drop bar shift levers that had post melt brakes on them, but it's much harder to find that now.
That is a very good point, without a doubt. Yeah, that's if you're going to buy modern stuff, they're probably going to be flat mount. But you can also, everybody's flat mount stuff, if it's Shimano, just go buy mountain Shimano calipers and it's going to work fine. Same thing with the SRAM stuff, just buy a two-piston XC post-mount caliper. It's going to work great.
I think that sounds like fun. I mean, I think that's a good use of your old cross-country bikes. Turn them into gravel bikes. Let's see. Who's next? That was the one that we did last week. The long question. We got one from Jake. Jake, this is a question from Jake for you. He says, hi. Semi-related to Kenny's driving instructions. Why is Salt Lake City a test bed for weird left turn arrangements? Driving through the Midvale, West Jordan, Daybreak area, it's like some traffic engineer opened up a textbook of intersections and was just like, yes, thanks, y'all.
Yeah, we do some fucked up shit where they do getting on the interstate, these weird interchanges, and all of a sudden your entire lane of traffic then goes to the other side of the road and then back again because they thought that was a fucking good idea. There are some dumb stuff that we do. I will say I see more roundabouts here than in other parts of the U.S., and I don't dislike roundabouts. I think it's a pretty reasonable thing. I'm sure there's probably traffic nerds out there, you know, like Jake is to rocks. I'm sure there's some traffic people out there who like went to real school for all this stuff. And there's all kinds of case studies on roundabouts and how much space they take up. I think probably the amount of space that a roundabout takes up is the problem, but you know, you don't have to have a lot of hardware, right? You don't have to like have streetlights that cost money and you have to maintain and are expensive and all the stuff. So I don't know. The one traffic thing that I don't mind here are roundabouts, but yes, you are 100% correct. We do some weird, dumbass shit with interchanges, and we're going to see even more weird stuff because as Salt Lake City grows and we just have that one main artery, and they're trying to do everything they can with that thing. And oh man, it's not a good time.
All right. Let's see who is next. That's the one I just read. Last question is from James Likes Bikes. I know you guys have mentioned the Shimano MT brake as a go-to basic repair brake. My shop sells a ton of these as basic repair brakes and just had a customer that we recently installed a brake, hit a tree, and break a brake lever. It is absolutely crazy how cheap these are. An MT200 hydraulic lever is literally $5.47 on QBP. It is crazy that thing can be manufactured, imported, and stocked at Q and still sold for pocket change. They are not great brakes by any means, but work perfectly fine until they don't.
But you're right.
Until the sauce leaks right out.
Until the sauce comes out.
You are right. The thing is, though, anecdotally from what I've seen, you're just as likely or maybe less likely to lose sauce out of an MT200 than you are like an XTR. And again, that's
just
not
because it doesn't get ridden much.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Maybe
I see
some MT200s that come in and the entire lever blade is silver from people's fingers rubbing on them. Like they have been used the fuck up. And they are
like,
still
I want to know what happens.
This is
if you swapped.
It's the 10,000 mile Marlin. And we see quite a
like
few.
What
of
would
them.
Happen if you swapped the MT200 onto, I don't know, some racer person's bike where they're riding it 15 hours a week on average? What would happen to it then?
They would have an aneurysm because their brake levers are like 7 inches long.
Yeah, it would be weird. In all seriousness, though, if I was like out of town and I was still into XC/marathon racing, and to go do that race, I had to throw a set of MT200s on my brake, on my bike, I would not be that bummed. I would not have a bad time at all. It'd be totally fine. Zero issue for me.
Also, I mean, that goes the same with like that SRAM level. It's not a level T, it's just a level. Like, that brake just works.
Yeah, I don't disagree. There's nothing wrong with the MT200. It'd be interesting to know. I'll do some research and maybe come back. I would be willing to bet that as a company, from the start of the MT200, we'll call it 10 plus years ago, until today, we have probably sold, it's got to be over 1,000 sets, but maybe more. It's unreal. I order 10 pairs a week, easy.
Yeah, I mean, I had a discussion with SRAM recently, and I'm not in a position to share numbers, but I was like, the motive ain't going to do it. I'm like, you can't stop making this brake. they were all, yeah, just run a motive. So then I walk around and I'm pointing out bikes and I'm like, kid's bike doesn't need a motive. This county bike doesn't need a motive. This 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 doesn't need a motive. I'm like, here. And I pulled it up and the rep looked at the numbers we've sold and made a true, like, slight gasp and was like, oh, I'll let the brake team know. I mean, yeah. And for any of you out there, or sorry, a DB8 or a DB6 or a DB4. I've said it before. I'm going to say it again. I think SRAM really dropped the ball on those DB4s and 6s by not making the lever ambidextrous. Because as a shop, we don't really stock front SRAM brakes. Because there's no reason. You can always put a rear on the front. But if you need to put a front on the rear, you have to take a line out of stock.
I agree. And I am such an advocate for all brakes, all brands need to be ambidextrous. You carry one damn skew. It's better for everybody on the planet.
Mm-hmm. You just chop some off, you know? And like for those of you at home that are rolling your eyes, you're like, just put a line on it. Well, a SRAM level, the base level retails for $70 and a hose retails for $45. So either I eat more than all of my profits, opportunity cost wise, by throwing a line at this thing, or I don't sell the brake. And I'm not into that. Like, just give me something that I can slap on anywhere, anytime.
It's also just annoying that, you know, we have a bunch of shops and it's so easy for a shop to have more fronts than rears and vice versa. And there's so many different brakes out there and it becomes almost like mismatched shoes. Where you've got like two lefts and a right and all kinds of garbage.
Yeah, and especially when they like change the model a little bit or just like change the color.
And then you're stuck with something. It. What do you do with it, right?
Yeah.
So just please make brakes ambidextrous. It makes life exactly twice as good.
Well, I would say it's more than twice as good because it's less than half as stressful. So I don't know. I can't do the math on that, but I think it's way more than twice.
And I get it. These manufacturers have to do all kinds of fancy stuff. They have their whole OEM operation where they cut brake lines to the millimeter that is requested by the bike manufacturers and all that kind of stuff. But in the aftermarket, it would just make your life so much easier. They're still having to do the same thing we are. They have to warehouse all this stuff and keep track of all these SKUs. And they go through a similar thing we do. So if they just only stocked in the aftermarket an ambidextrous brake, boom, just so much better. And then little things too, when you have to carry replacement levers for a customer who inevitably, you know, has a, or for example, a Shimano one that fails because they fail all the freaking time. And I've got to now carry left and right brake levers. Granted, in the MT200s, it's only an additional $5, but you get my point, right? It's something,
it's not
something non-trivial.
Stock, but it's not just that. It's that you need to have four in stock, which means you have two lefts and two rights. You sell two rights, now you have two lefts. The next person that comes in needs a right, you're out of stock. If you had had three ambidextries, ambidextri?
That word is really fucking up your face.
No, I'm trying to think of how to, I was trying to like octopus, octopi. I was trying to like make a joke on pluralizing ambidextrous. But if you had three ambidextrous levers, you could sell three levers to any three customers that needed a lever. So
cool. Wow, that was a great tangent on MT200s. But MT200s are fantastic brakes. Nothing wrong with them. There's a reason we carry them. We make good margin on them. They're really reasonable to the customer. For the most part, labor is going to be as much as the brake is to install those things.
And then, you know, like I priced it out the other day. I think it was like over $200 to put level $70 brakes on a bike. They had some, the bike hadn't been ridden in a long time and it's not a Shimano problem this time, but like all the fluid had just puked out of the calipers. So the rotors were, you know, they needed to nearly go like in the grease disposal of the restaurant next door. So, you know, we got $100 in rotors, $140 in brakes, and then, you know, $80 in labor. Like, you know, it adds up quick. Bikes are expensive.
All right.
It was just a commuter bike, and I was like, you want to do that? She's like, I can't get another one of these for $240. And I was like, no, ma'am, you can't. She's like, yeah, let's do it. So
I'm more excited by like MT200s and those Shimano 315 7 and 8 speed rear shifters than I am about the new DI2 12-speed.
We had a patron question in Slack about Shimano 12-speed.
All right.
It's from 4x5x21, which is Phil, patron Phil. Says, why do the trio hate Shimano 12-speed?
Wait. 4x5x21 is 420.
Okay. Why do the trio hate Shimano 12-speed drivetrains so much? I'm guessing you guys have good reason, and it has something to do with what you have seen in shops. I had one, XT1051, on for about a year and did destroy bend the shift lever in a crash, which was annoying. I guess the shifter also needed quite a bit more force to shift, too, versus the lighter actions
seems
of SRAM.
Like...
Hold on, it gets better.
Seems like he's answering his own question, but keep going.
Although I can see people being liking it for being positive. While the cassette creaked a little bit as well, it didn't seem like it was an overall terrible experience, and I would have been open to it again at the right price.
So, first of all, Kenny, let me get this started off, because I'm just going to ignore the fact that he said it was hard to shift, the cassette creaked, and the shifter bent really easily. Just from a shop perspective.
I mean, he said it was in a crash, so we don't know how bad that was. Like,
I don't know the last time I saw a broken off.
I see like a broken off NX or SX every once in a while.
Yeah, but those are made out of sadness and old cheese.
But I've seen at least 10 or 20 completely dead XTR 12-speed shifters, fucking XTR, that were less than a year old, just completely dead.
Hold on. Before you go ripping into that, Kenny, what I want to do is I want to go backwards in time, and we're going to tangent into this talking about SKUs. The big problem with Shimano, and we talked about this on the release of XTR DI2 12-speed, is new fucking ice, or just more iSpec shit. That's the first thing. When you open a pair of high-end, and I say this because the levels aren't matchmaker extreme, so... this doesn't count. But when you open a pair of any MMX SRAM brake, you open the package and there will be a brake lever, a hose, a caliper, two fixing bolts, and there will be the MMX clamp along with the MMX adapter to hold a shifter if you so choose. So if you buy a SRAM brake, you have everything that you need to attach the brake to the bicycle, assuming you don't need adapters for your brake, which... you know, but they've given you everything.
And you know what it could also hold? It could also hold your dropper lever.
Well, hold on. It gets better, though. And then when you open up a SRAM shifter, there's only one shifter SKU. You know, let's ignore color or level, right? Like XO, GX, yada, 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 all that shit. But when you open up a shifter, you get a discrete clamp for the shifter and the bolt for the discrete clamp. So if you were to buy a new SRAM brake set and drivetrain, you would have all the mounting options for all the possibilities contained within the boxes that you've already purchased.
Yep, that's
so
very true.
That is my first thing on SRAM, is they just make it so freaking easy to just make things work. Simplification of SKUs. And that's why I'm so tough on them about the DB4s and DB6s, because this is a departure from what they've done for us as shops in the past. So, with that little rant out of the way, like, bruh, come on. Like, it's hard to shift.
Well, people might not realize that not only does iSpec suck, when someone calls in and like, hey, I'm trying to mount a whatever shifter to a whatever Shimano brake lever, I'm like, okay, here's the deal. I'm going to take down your phone number because I have no fucking idea. I'm going to go break open some encyclopedias and figure out what the fuck you have. And there's going to be some weird third party ass shit that you're going to have to buy to make your stuff work. And also go find a random 12-speed Shimano shifter on someone's bike and go wiggle it for me.
It's loose.
It's fucking loose. Every goddamn one of them inexplicably is just like loose at that main pivot bolt. But you can't take that pivot bolt out. If you do, like, you're not supposed to take it out. Well, you can take that bolt out, actually. And shockingly enough, the shifter doesn't fall apart. It's still just the same amount of looseness as if the bolt was in. But you can't take it out and like put a new clamp on it or anything like that. The bolt just fucking goes to nowhere. And it's just perpetually loose.
And in a pinch, you can use a rotor bolter.
God, I'm getting all riled up, man. I fucking hate Shimano stuff so much. It's so bad.
Well, the thing I was going to bring up, and Jake actually had responded to his, you know, why does everyone hate Shimano? And he has some really good points. Very sensitive to cable tension. So, like, you can have the clutch turned off on a Shimano.
Oh, yeah, all the clutches are broken. I forgot about that.
And you can have it turned off. You can adjust the shifting to where it's good. You know, good shifting. And then you turn the clutch on, and the shifting just goes to absolute shit.
If you remember that really weird cartoon, Salad Fingers, when Salad Fingers talks to the little boy, and the little boy does the, like, scream, but it, like, his mouth is this, like, darkness, depths of hell, just unnaturally black inside. That's what happens when you turn the clutch on a Shimano derailleur. Like, that little kid is in there, and he screams as that lever is flipped, and your shifting just goes to hell.
Well, and you can take the little cover off, and you can put some special grease on the clutch, and you can adjust the clutch to where it barely works, and that will allow you to have the clutch. Technically, it's turned on, and it is slightly stiffer than not turned on at all, but that's just what you have to do in that situation. Like, if you actually want the clutch to make the chain stay quiet, your shifting's just going to suck.
Also, when the clutch is on, assuming everything is working and it's brand new, there's just random play in the clutch as well. So clutch is on, and you can still wiggle the cage back and forth enough that your chain just slaps anyway.
All right. Well,
also, if you have a set of...
That's why we hate Shimano 12-speed.
Yeah, if you have a set of Shimano brakes... A, they're going to die in 1 to 2 years. They're going to leak out of the master cylinder at the lever. They all do it. And B, you should crack open your bleed port sometime and go take a look at that fluid in a brake that's 1 year old that's been ridden an average amount. It will be fucking black.
Well, and my favorite part of that is I had someone the other day at the shop, and I mean, very honest question. They're like, dude, sometimes these Shimano brakes, they just won't flow. And I was like, and I look at the bike, and based on the age of the bike, the color of the brake, in terms of, you know, I just glance at it and see that it's 11-speed era Shimano.
His brake won't flow?
Like, yeah, as in, like, you're trying to bleed it, and nothing will dribble out of the bleed port.
Gotcha.
I'm like, yeah, dude, just rip the whole bleed nipple out and watch all the sadness come out. And he's like, well, some of it came out. And I'm like, yeah, but I bet if you take it, it just, like, got clogged up with nasty. And he took it out, and he's like, that's bad.
Yeah, I just do that because it's faster.
And by the way, this is coming from a person who, by my own, it was my choice, I ran Shimano's, multiple versions of them, in fact, and gave them a good try because I was so over the SRAM stuff because they had fucked me. After the 9th time I got fucked by them, I was like, yeah, I'm out. So I had to try something else, and Shimano was next on the list. And I had a set of XTR 980s, maybe. I might be getting my model numbers wrong. And then I had...
That would be 10-speed.
Yep, I had those, the Chrome Boys. And then I had... What did I have after that? I had the quad piston XTRs. And I did, for a minute, have an SLX on a new bike that died in 1 month. So yeah, again, this is coming from someone I've not only owned and ridden Shimano, and I want it to be good... But I also work on and see this stuff every day, and the Shimano stuff is problematic. I know we just told you MT200s are great, but that's also a price point thing. For the price, you can't beat them. And I also swear that MT200s are going to be more reliable than the nicer stuff, which is super counterintuitive, but I'll stand by that.
All right. Well, Bill, there's your reasons. I think we're going to... you guys ready to do patrons and wrap it up?
Sure.
Yep.
I know we got Kenny a little bit fired up now, and now we're like, okay, the show's over.
We're just going to blue ball Kenny, just... not let him get a real rant out. Well, no, give us a driving lesson for
your
rant.
Is there any how to drive a fucking car?
We touched on this one. We'll do one today. We'll keep it really light.
Okay.
So, yeah, this is episode 6.5 of Kenny's How to Drive a Fucking Car on the Just Riding Along show. All right. Today's topic, you're lost in your car. You have no fucking idea what's going on. I don't know.
Wait, so like you're inside the vehicle
your vehicle. You're trying to get to somewhere. By the way, like we've got some pretty modern tech here, right? Like we got badass phones, can connect to Elon Musk internet. You got a fucking literal computer on your watch on your wrist that gives you – it buzzes and gives you turn-by-turn directions and shit. But your dumb ass has still not figured out how to get to somewhere. And you're clearly lost. And you decide to drive 10 miles an hour. And there's a line of 47 people behind you. So here's my advice to you. When you realize that you're fucking lost and you have no idea what's going on, turn into a goddamn parking lot. Go find a church. There's a zillion of them in Utah. Go find a fucking parking lot anywhere you want. Get off the goddamn road, figure your fucking shit out, and put it in goddamn Google, and then drive to that place. But when you are half lost and fiddling around, get the fuck out of my way. There you go.
And along the same, whatever device you're using to get directions, when you realize you're lost, definitely do what Kenny said. Pull into a church parking lot.
And by the way, this is not masturbation time where you're going to turn on your four-way hazards and pull over on the side of a busy road. That doesn't solve any problems. I don't know. Still don't understand. I wish someone could tell me why everyone in Utah does this shit. I passed another 47 cars on the interstate that were able-bodied like modern vehicles, and they weren't Ford, so they weren't broken down. And they're just pulled over on the damn interstate. With their fucking blinkers on, no flat tires, perfectly running car. What the fuck are you doing? The interstate is not the place to fuck around, or you're going to find out.
Well, what I was going to say is if you do say, oh, I'm lost, I need to use this electronic device to figure out where I am and where I should go. Do pull into a parking lot. Don't use that device while you are driving.
Yeah, there's very little reason to do any of that, because also we're talking about modern ass shit here. You can just yell at your watch like, hey, Siri, yeah, I'm a fucking moron. Say. Get me to Timmy's house. And it's like, OK. And it fucking does it. You don't even have to touch anything.
Yeah. So unless everything is voice controlled, which even that's arguable, like you're still diverting some of your attention. Even though you
use Siri in your car, if you're allowed to drive with like 7 kids with milkshakes in a minivan, talking to Siri is way less distracting.
Yeah, the amount that I'm yelling at people in my car, that's mostly what I'm doing when I'm driving in my car. It's me actively yelling at the person in front of me doing some stupid ass shit. So if I'm legally allowed to do that.
Can you get a dash cam and then like a two-way dash cam, so we have like a view of what's in front of you and then a view of your face?
My best part is going to be Kenny's like, jam into Kesha and he turns that shit down. He's like, just fucking drive your car. And then he turns it back up and he's like,
there you go. I think that's pretty accurate. On the way home from work today, on a straight ass road with not much going on, there's a couple roundabouts in there, but this is like a 3 mile long road, this dead fucking straight. It's got a 35 mile an hour speed limit. It's pretty basic level driving shit here. Somebody was driving 25 miles an hour, 10 miles an hour under the fucking speed limit with a line of 40 cars behind her. And she was just driving 25 miles an hour. Not like even looking or being apprehensive, just had literally the cruise control on at 25 miles an hour for the entirety of this road. It's just wild. Wild, but basically walking pace.
If you're Usain Bolt of walking.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to read patrons. We'll wrap it up. Glad to give Kenny that little opportunity to rant there, though.
Yeah, thank you.
Anytime. All right, so our patrons starting at $10 per month. We've got Zozo, Willie DeGoat, Tom's P, Tom Pickle, Timothy, Ty, Tennessee Zach, Taylor Zwift, Taper Bore Pro, Sparkly Nips, Skunk in Your Trap, Samuel, Ryan, Ride Time Extended, Noah, My Pal Dal, MTV Shenanigans,
Mike Jones,
Leland, Kurt, Josh, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, JC, Jake D, Green Giant, Gordon, Frank the Tank, Fart Noises, Eric, Chunk Norris, Cam Irish 1, Burt Reynolds Mustache, Bill, Bearded Bag O' Dicks, Barrel of Dicks, Apple Bottom Make 'em Wanna Bite, Hungry JRA Forever, J. Aaron _, then at $11.11 per month, that one uncle whose hugs last just a little too long.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. We said it last week.
At 14 Australian, we've got Patamillan Disco. Dean at 16. Thank you, Taco. Dean at 16.50 Australian. At $20 a month, we've got Scott, Poop Ranch, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds. Brian, our dog is really pissed off. Sorry. At $26.06 per month, these S-Works taste like snozzberries. Charlie at 30, Troy at 31, and six-pack outdoors, trails don't build themselves. At, and that skunk in your trap name reminded me yesterday. So I've had some kind of little critter gnawing on my squash. Like my winter squash, it's like some butternut squash and stuff, is out next to the chicken yard. And something has been eating on one of the squashes. And so I set a trap out there. And I'm thinking I'm going to catch a rabbit or some kind of rodent of whatever, of unusual size, something like that. And then yesterday, I was going down the driveway and I look over and I'm like, is that a cat inside there? Did I catch a cat? No, it was a very small fox. Like a very a young, like a juvenile fox, like a small cat-sized fox was in the trap. And I think all I can imagine, I did Google it later. Apparently foxes will eat squash, but I looked at like the tooth marks where this one was being eaten, and it was definitely not from a fox. It was from a rodent. But yeah, I think some of the smell of the lures and stuff that I had had in there previously from trapping, I think the fox had just been probably perusing the chicken yard, which we've never had problems with foxes going after the chickens because of the electric fence. Yeah, and I think it was just, you know, cruising by and smelled the trap and went in there and got caught. But we let him loose because it was little.
He was fast as fuck, boy.
Yeah, as soon as the door was open, that thing just took off. And, like, it didn't slow down. It didn't run a little bit and then, like, slow down. It just went as fast as it possibly could until it was out of sight and we couldn't see it anymore. So, yeah. Sorry, that patron name just reminded me that some people might appreciate that nugget of, I don't know, it's not even a chicken nugget, fox nugget. All right, everyone, are we finished?
Shut it down.
Okay, thank you all for listening, and good night.
Bye. Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of your pants.